It's great to be here. It's great to be back from a couple of weeks away, and it's lovely to be able to share with you this morning. This morning in Kids Church, they're learning all about their sending and how each of us are sent by Jesus to share his love with others. And so we're going to follow the kids' theme this morning, and we're going to be looking at our sending as well, and explore what that might look like. And we're going to do that by looking at a couple of stories of sending that we find in the Bible, which actually also happen to be found in the Old Testament. We're going to be looking at the stories of Isaiah and Moses and of their sending. You know, as a church, we spent a couple of months in the book of Daniel exploring that. Last week, Emma preached on Judges 4, the story of Deborah. And this morning, we're going to continue to dive into the richness that we find in the Old Testament. And if you just quickly, if you missed last week, I encourage you to have a listen on our website. And it was great to be able to do that, to listen. And last week Emma said that it's often rare that we hear about the stories of the many women of faith in the Bible. And I think just as unfortunate is the rarity that we hear women preaching on women in the Bible, and just women preaching in general. So I encourage you to have a listen. I appreciate Emma's encouragement last week, unpacking that story of Deborah, the example of Deborah, to as we listen to God and as we step into all that God has for us. And you know, as I listened to that and as I thought about the many different stories of women leaders in the Bible, I just remember praying and that God would just continue and that God would raise up many women to lead our churches into the future. So it was a great encouragement. I encourage you to listen. And we're going to continue in the Old Testament this morning. But before we get to Isaiah and Moses, we're going to start with the words of Jesus. These are fairly foundational words of Jesus. These are words that Jesus spoke to his disciples after his resurrection, before his ascension. He met them as they were gathered together in a locked room. And he said these words, "As the Father has sent me, I am sending you." In the same way the Father has sent Jesus, he was now sending his disciples, and by implication, us as well as his followers. Jesus is saying, in the same way that God sent me to see his kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven, he now sends us. But this idea of God sending people to participate in the work that he's doing in the world didn't start here. We find it all throughout God's big story in the Bible. And I want to look at a couple of examples of that this morning. And the first one is Isaiah's sending. In Isaiah chapter 6, we read about Isaiah the prophet's sending by God. I'm going to read a couple of verses to paint the picture of Isaiah's sending for us. Isaiah chapter 6, starting at verse 1. "In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord, high and exalted, seated on the throne, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above him were seraphim, each with six wings. With two wings they covered their faces, with two they covered their feet, and with two they were flying. And they were calling out to one another, 'Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. The whole earth is full of his glory.' At the sound of their voices, the doorposts and thresholds shook, and the temple was filled with smoke. 'Woe to me,' I cried, 'I am ruined, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips, and my eyes have seen the King, the Lord Almighty.' Then one of the seraphim flew to me with a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with tongs from the altar. With it he touched my mouth and said, 'See, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away and your sin atoned for.' Then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, 'Whom shall I send? And who will go for us?' And I said, 'Here am I. Send me.' He said, 'Go and tell this people.'" Now, God has always been the sent and sending God. And we participate in this sending, both by being sent and by participating in the sending of one another. As the church, as this collective of followers of Jesus, we call people to Jesus so they might then be sent as well. It might be sent as the Father has sent Jesus, because Jesus now sends us. But what is that? What are we calling people to? What does that sending actually look like? I want us to explore a bit this morning about what is our perception of being sent. I mean, it's pretty hard to argue with the words of Jesus, "I'm sending you." It's kind of like that's what's happening. But what does that actually look like for us? Is our perception of being sent like people like Ivan Budalinka, who was sent to Kenya all those years ago to start the Mission in Action Children's Home? Is our perception of being sent like those who are sent each Friday afternoon up to Clifford Park? Is it like those who are involved in the church, being called and sent into ministry opportunities in the church? I want to share with you some words by a guy by the name of Mark Green, and he's part of the London Institute for Contemporary Christianity, and he has two statements about our perception of our sending and what we think that looks like. I think it's a helpful summary of a couple of different perceptions that we can have. And the first one that I want to share with you, he says, we think our sending looks like to recruit the people of God to use some of their leisure time to join the missionary initiatives of church paid workers. I mean, this is so often our perception of being sent, and this is so often how we see that sending kind of lived out. We kind of see it, our sending, our living out our faith as using some of our leisure time to be a part of the initiatives that church-paid ministry workers come up with. Mark Green's second statement about our perception of being sent is this: to equip the people of God for fruitful mission in all of their life. Now, those two statements contrast quite starkly when you read them together, and you might be thinking like I did, well, if you put it down like that, it's pretty obvious, you know, the kind of shortcomings of the first one and the kind of allure and the attractiveness of the second. But my question then was, well, why do we only often really do the first if it's so obvious to us? We feel guilty because we don't have much or any leisure time and to use to join the missionary initiatives of church paid workers. And therefore, you know, we can often see ourselves as not really living out our faith. We're not really being a part of any ministry. This is often why we might try and ask so little of people, that they don't really have to do much at all. We make the bar so low that they don't really have to do anything, but we can still tick the box. Yes, they're involved. Yes, they're living out their sentness. And, you know, it just becomes this kind of exhausting cycle. We, as church-paid workers, we apologize for asking you to be involved, and you either say yes and become burdened and resentful, or you say no and you feel guilty and disengaged. Because somehow, somewhere along the line, we've framed up what it means to be part of a church by how much leisure time you use to join the initiatives of church-paid workers. It's pretty obvious, isn't it? We need to move towards that second statement. We need to move towards that second statement so that as Christians we shift our thinking to see that being representations of Christ at my work, at my kids' school, amongst my family and friends who are still yet to believe, representations at my community club or community group, in my neighbourhood, all of that is just as much as part of our sending as any church ministry or church roster. One way to think about our sending is that as we are sent, we are depositing traces of grace in all of our life. But the trouble is, when we think about the idea that we are sent, we're trying to pinpoint an Isaiah experience. We kind of expect that in our sending, there ought to be tremors and smoke and worshipping seraphim and the voice of the Lord that we can hear and respond to. You know, Isaiah has this incredible experience of his sending, and he hears God. And interestingly, God's not requesting of him. He just hears God reflecting. Whom shall I send? Who's going to go for us? And we read Isaiah is there. He's ready. He puts up his hand. He says, here am I. Send me. And we kind of think that's what our sending ought to look like. But I actually think our sending, more often than not, looks like Moses rather than Isaiah. Now, the story of Moses is, again, a story of being called and sent. And it's going to help shape our perspective of our sending, and it's going to shape it more towards that equipping each other as the people of God to that fruitful mission in all of our life. We read about the call of Moses in Exodus chapter 3. If you've got your Bibles there, you can flick open with me and have a look at this very familiar story. So we know in the first couple of chapters of Exodus, there's a new Pharaoh that becomes king of Egypt. He no longer remembers the story of Joseph, who was this Hebrew person that basically interpreted dreams and ultimately set into place some plans that saved Egypt from a horrific famine. This new Pharaoh doesn't know that story, hasn't remembered that story, and he sees this group of foreigners, these Hebrew people that are living and making their home in Egypt, and he sees an opportunity. He sees an opportunity for some slave labor, and so he enforces the Hebrew people into slave labor, but that wasn't enough because they continued to grow, and he got concerned about the growth of this group of foreigners in his country, and so he then embarks on this horrific, evil population control program. And this is the time that Moses is born into. And so he is at real risk as a newborn boy of having his life ended. And so his mum puts him in a basket, pushes him out amongst the reeds on the River Nile, and Pharaoh's daughter comes along and finds him, and ironically ends up inviting Moses' mother, without knowing who that was, to come and help raise Moses. But Moses is then brought into Pharaoh's household and raised by Pharaoh's daughter. And about halfway through chapter 2 of Exodus, we kind of catch up with Moses' story from verse 11 of chapter 2. One day, after Moses had grown up, he went out to where his own people were and watched them at their hard labor. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his own people. Looking this way and that and seeing no one, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. The next day he went out and saw two Hebrews fighting. He asked the one in the wrong, "Why are you hitting your fellow Hebrew?" The man said, "Who made you ruler and judge over us? Are you thinking of killing me just as you killed the Egyptian?" Then Moses was afraid and thought, "What I did must have become known." When Pharaoh heard about this, he tried to kill Moses, but Moses fled from Pharaoh and went to live in Midian, where he sat down by a well. Now a priest of Midian had seven daughters, and they came to draw water and fill their troughs to water their father's flock. Some shepherds came along and drove them away, but Moses got up and came to their rescue and watered their flock. And then we have this kind of interesting little cultural story of Moses being invited back to their house, and their father giving one of his daughters to Moses in marriage, and he settles down. He's found a new home, a new family, and he's given a new job. And chapter 2 ends, though, not in Midian, but back in Egypt. And there's this kind of like summary statement that God hears the cries of his people in Egypt, and he remembers the promises he made to their ancestors. And chapter 2 wraps up with that, casting our minds back to Egypt. And then we read about Moses' call, a very familiar story to us, the beginning of chapter 3. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within the bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I'll go over and see this strange sight, why this bush does not burn up. It's interesting, isn't it? Where was Moses when he was called by God? He was at work. He was at work doing his job, tending the flock. Moses was at work. He wasn't having this quiet, contemplative time of seeking after God, of desiring to hear from God in prayer and worship. God shows up at his work, which is kind of the last place we often expect. And do you expect God to show up at your work? Do you think God might be doing stuff around you at your work? Might he be speaking to you through your work? God shows up at Moses' work and calls him, but God calls him to God's agenda and God's mission. Have a look at verse 10 of chapter 3. God speaking to Moses. So now go, I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. God was sending Moses was being sent into God's agenda, into God's mission, to go and rescue his people out of Egypt. As God was sending Moses into his agenda and mission, God was at the very same time sending Moses in Moses' area of experience. Think about it. Moses grew up in Pharaoh's house. He knew kind of how that all worked and was familiar with the people in that household. And that's where God was sending him, to Pharaoh's household. Think about the place where Moses was working when God showed up. He was in the wilderness, the same wilderness that he was going to lead the people out of Egypt into. He had the right experience. Moses also, though, had the right passion. God was sending Moses in an area of his passion. You know, earlier in chapter 2, we read that Moses passionately identifies with his people, the Hebrew people. It talks about when going out to watching his own people at hard labor. It says he saw an Egyptian beating one of his own people. He passionately identifies with his people, desires justice for them. And that's exactly what God is sending him into. He has a desire to see justice for his people, and God is sending him to bring about that justice, that freedom from oppression that he so deeply desires. You can kind of start to see that Moses is actually a pretty good candidate for this job, which is interesting when we come to his response, but we'll get there. But before we get to his response, there's one other aspect of Moses that God is sending him into, and that is his character. God was sending Moses in a way that reflected who he was. We read about Moses' character, that he has a predisposition to action. His initial response to situations is to get involved. When an Egyptian is beating up a Hebrew, he gets involved. When there's two Hebrews fighting and beating up on one another, he gets involved. When there's some shepherds that are harassing some women trying to draw water, Moses gets involved. He has this initial response to action, and God is sending him into action to do something, to be involved in the great rescue of his people. Moses doesn't just see injustice and kind of sit back and reflect on the unfortunate nature of that. No, he gets involved. And so God is sending him in a way that reflects who he is. Not as a bystander on God's great rescue of his people, but a key person in bringing about that rescue. Moses clearly was the number one candidate for this job. He was sent to Pharaoh's house to demand his people are to be freed, a household that he was familiar with. He was sent to lead the people into the wilderness, a place that he'd been working in and was familiar with. He was sent to rescue and be about the freedom of a people that he passionately identified with and desired justice for. And God was sending him into action, doing something in line with his character. Moses, God was bringing together all these circumstances of Moses' life to form and shape him for this role. He was the perfect fit. And yet, we get to his response to God, and he says, "Nah, I'm not your man." And the rest of chapter 3 and half of chapter 4, we hear about Moses' objections to this sending. So what was Moses' problem when he was really the best man for the job? Well, Moses' problem was fear. And there are a number of things that we can pick up from this story about what Moses was fearful about. He was fearful about being held accountable for past behavior. Let's not forget, you know, he fled Egypt because his life was in danger for killing an Egyptian. The thought of going back there, I mean, what if he went back and was arrested? Or what if he went back and the family of the person he killed came after him and sought to avenge that death? He was also fearful of the people rejecting his leadership. I mean, God was sending him to lead the people out of Egypt. But his last interaction with his people in Egypt was he was trying to intervene, be a peacemaker, and they were like, "Who are you? Who made you ruler and judge over us?" There was a rejection of him, and he was fearful that then he would be rejected again. He was also fearful that they might not believe him. I mean, we read that at the beginning of verse 1. He just kind of comes out and says, "What if they just don't believe me? What if he went back and, you know, the Egyptians didn't arrest him or didn't try and kill him, and the people were not completely hostile to him? They weren't completely against what he was trying to do and be involved in." But then he kind of gets to the point of telling him how he came to come back and rescue them. And he says, "I was out in the wilderness. And I saw this bush burning, but it wasn't burning up. And then God spoke to me through this burning bush that wasn't burning up." Yeah, right. Okay, Moses, maybe you've just spent a little bit too much time out in that desert sun. Or maybe there's just something funny going on in that water at Midian there that you've been drinking. Yeah, right. He was fearful that they might just not believe him. And one of his last kind of objections to this sending of God was that he was fearful that his skills were inadequate. And we read that in verse 10 of chapter 4. He says to God, "You're asking me to go and speak to Pharaoh, but I'm slow of speech and tongue. I can't do it. I don't have the skills to do what you're asking me to do." And it's this interaction that we read between God and Moses, and after God in his divine patience answers and responds to all these fear-driven objections of Moses, including some kind of bizarre miraculous signs of throwing a stick on the ground and turning into a snake and then picking it back up and it turning back into his staff, and then putting his hand in his cloak and it's almost falling off with the disease, and then he puts it back in and it's not, and all this crazy stuff. After all this response from God, what was Moses' final plea? "Just send someone else, please." After all this, not only God speaking into his fears and doubts, but having these miraculous experiences with God, he pleads with God to just send someone else. It's not quite the Isaiah response, is it? Not quite the response that Isaiah gave. Not really. Isaiah didn't really know what he was being sent into, but he just kind of stuck up his hand and, here am I, send me. Moses' response is just a little bit different to that. And yet I think, more often than not, I am, and I think we all are, like Moses more than Isaiah when it comes to the idea of being sent. And I think there's probably a myriad of reasons why that is the case, but I think often we're more like Moses than Isaiah because we actually prefer the anonymity of the grandstand rather than the possibility of failure in the arena. We prefer to cheer and to boo than to step out and have a go ourselves. And maybe because we hold similar fears to Moses, what Moses held thousands and thousands of years ago. So we just sit and we watch. We lean back in our chairs, we cross our arms, and we think, if I don't do anything, I can't do it wrong. You might feel that this idea of sending and being called and sent by God is just for someone else. So we can say things like, I'll just keep doing my best at my work, I'll just keep building up my kids, or whatever it is that you're going to be doing this week. And sure, we can pray for those who are really sent, and we can encourage and the sent ones in what they are doing, but it's just not for me. Can I say to you this morning, and my hope and prayer is that this rings in your minds tomorrow morning when you wake up. God is sending you. God is sending you. You know, as Christians, we are sent wherever life finds us as God's people. We are his representatives because it's his mission to redeem the whole world. And so he is at work throughout the whole world, everywhere. So wherever we find ourselves, we are his representatives partnering in his work. It's God's mission to see his kingdom come in your workplace, in your family, in your friends. And we know that God chooses to use us in the things that he is doing. So that means that wherever you end up this week, wherever you find yourself each week, you are sent there by God to partner in his redeeming work of the world. You can't just say to God, just send someone else to my work or send someone else to my family. It didn't work for Moses. It doesn't work for us. And I say this to each and every one of you and to anyone who listens as a follower of Jesus. God is sending you. Jesus himself said, as the Father has sent me, I am sending you. But you know, as we think about this sending, this isn't just about our own personal sending, our own personal participation in what God is doing all around us. It is that, but it's not just about that. And we do this together because God has wired us for relationships. In John 15, Jesus says, there's one vine, and it's him. And we're all connected to him. And when we're all connected to Jesus, we're automatically connected to one another. You know, when we say yes to Jesus and give our life to him, we're saying yes to the fellowship of all believers at the same time. We're saying yes to both. It's not an optional extra. And you know, we come together like this on a Sunday morning and we call it a church gathering. What do we call it? Church. That's what we're doing, right? Yeah, church. We call it church, a gathering with a purpose. That's where the word church comes from, the Greek word ecclesia, a gathering with a purpose. We are a gathering with a purpose to worship, to deepen our discipleship, to deepen our fellowship, and to partner in our sending. That is the purpose as we gather as followers of Jesus. And you know, as we begin to understand that more fully, as we get to kind of grasping the idea that we are all sent, I think there's a few different conversations that we're going to start hearing around as we gather together. Conversations like someone saying to another person, I'm sent as a grandparent, as a parent, as a carer for kids, and I want to know what ministry with and to families looks like, because God's agenda is to see kids flourish in life and faith, and I'm part of that, so I want to know what that looks like. Or we hear conversations like someone might say, "Well, I'm sent to the marginalized and the hungry and the downtrodden, and they're my people." And someone, "Oh, you too. That's you too. Oh, great. What does it look like for us to partner in God's mission amongst those people? What does it look like for us together to see the downtrodden lifted up, to see the hungry fed, to see the forgotten remembered? Let's figure that out together." Or we might hear someone saying, I know I'm sent to my workplace, but I'm struggling. I want to know how to hear God at my work. Can we partner in that? Can we pray together? Can we discern and disciple one another about hearing God and listening to what He is saying and encourage each other to go and do what God says? Or we might say to someone, I find myself amongst those who are lonely and shut in. And I want to express God's love and care for them. I want to say to them with my words and my actions that they matter to God. And because they matter to God, they matter to me. And then you find out when you say, oh, someone else is doing that. Well, tell me, teach me, show me. How does that work? Let's share with one another. I want to share my gift of being able to just sit with a cup of tea and listen to someone who is lonely. I mean, we have aged care facilities full of people like that. Let's partner together. Let's share the burdens that we take on from these people that we are sent to. And all of a sudden, as those conversations start to ripple out amongst us, all of a sudden, our gathering with a purpose makes sense. Because I want to celebrate, cry, dream, and laugh with you. I want to remind you, and I want to be reminded of God's grace and great love and power. I want to pray together and then go out and do it all again that week. Isn't that a church that you want to be a part of? You know, each of us and all of us have experiences, passions, and unique characters that are no accident. In fact, they actually give us a hint about what it is that God is sending us to. We know we're all sent to love God and love others. We know that. But that's going to look different for each of us because of our experiences, our passions, our interests, and our characters. They give us a hint about what that sending looks like here and now. But you know, just like Moses needed something, we need something too. Just like Moses, we need some anchors of knowledge to hold on to. Because this is not an easy life to live. We need the anchor of knowledge. We need to know and hold on to that it's God that is sending us. Jesus' words to his followers, "As the Father has sent me, I am sending you." It's God that is sending us. And it's God's mission. You know, in Colossians 1, verse 19 and 20, we read that God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in Jesus, and through him to reconcile himself to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. God's mission is reconciling all things to himself. In Revelation 21, verse 5, the one who is seated on the throne says, "Look, I am making all things new. This is God's mission. It's God's mission to reconcile all things to himself, to renew all things. And the third anchor that we need to hold on to is that God's love never fails. These wonderful words at the end of Romans chapter 8. In all these things, we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. For I am convinced that neither death nor life, neither angels nor demons, neither the present nor the future, nor any powers, neither heights nor depth, nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God that is in Christ Jesus our Lord. God's love never fails. God is sending you. Wherever you find yourself this week, God is sending you there. And chances are that that sending in some way lines up with your experiences in life so far, your passions and interests, and how God has wired you. God is sending you to participate in the redemptive work that he's already doing. He is already at work. It's his mission, reconciling all things to himself, whether things in earth or in heaven, renewing all things. It's God who is sending you. It's God's mission, and his love never fails. You know, today I thought instead of just having something to think about and to ponder as we go, I thought we'd actually spend some time living this out, applying this practically here and now, partnering in God's sending work. Because God sends us, but we partner with him in all that he does, including his sending work of each other. So as a way to practically send each other into this week, we're going to spend a couple of minutes sharing and praying for each other. If you're not comfortable in sharing with those around you, please feel free to just reflect quietly, and that is more than okay. But we want to spend some time sharing and praying. And I want this to be, because it's only going to be a few minutes, we're just going to get a taster of it. I've got some things to ask and some things to pray. And I'd love it if you could stick to that and just spend a couple of minutes doing this with one or two other people. Spend some time sharing and praying for each other, because church is a place where we gather together from our weeks of life, wherever that finds us. We gather together and then we're sent back out into the next week of life, knowing that it's God who is sending us, knowing that it is God's mission, and knowing that God's love never fails. But we do that together. That's the way God has made us. And so as an expression of our fellowship, I'm going to ask in a moment that you spend some time sharing around these three things. What will you be doing tomorrow morning? What's one challenge that you're going to face this week, and how can I pray for you? And then to simply respond by praying in your own words that it's God that is sending you, it's God's mission, and God's love never fails. I'd love it for you to be able to do that with one or two others, take some turns. And after two or three minutes, Andrea and the team are going to come up and start leading us in our final song for this morning. If you want to continue to pray with one another during that song, please do that. But if you're ready to join in, Andrea will and the team will just come and they'll start singing and they'll start leading us in that final song. So if I can ask you to step out, let's partner in God's sending of one another this week and to share and pray. And after a few minutes, Andrea and the team will come and lead us in the final song. Let's do that.